Blog Talk Radio.
From the silencing of a legend, B.B. King, to the fake news of George Stephanopoulos' mainstream media and broadcasting from a specially reinforced and beautifully designed single-wide trailer, Kelly O'Connell 606, 15th of May, 2015, well, another nice night, a little bit of rain last night, and it was real lovely. It was keep the door open kind of weather. We have lost a blues legend, B.B. King. I've got a little clip, a little biographical clip on B.B. King here for you. So B.B. King was almost 90 when he passed away, and a real legend, and supposedly a pretty nice guy. He got in trouble for a few sexist comments a few years ago, but, I mean, different generation, you know. Never heard anything really negative about the guy. Okay, so got some other stories for you. The main one today that I saw that I thought you might be interested in is George Stephanopoulos was discovered. This is the former right-hand man of Bill Clinton, and at one time was meant to be an Eastern Orthodox priest, gave $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation. And, you know, I mean, he's an ABC News anchor, so that's really kind of a crazy situation to be in, where the news media is hiring these people at some level because they had a highly sourced background to the previous administrations, but you've got the wife of the former president who he's supposed to be covering independently. And it turns out he's a very partisan person to the tune of $75,000. Most people don't have $75,000 to give away. Most people wouldn't give $75,000 if they did to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. But anyway, that's the kind of news that we've got in the United States in the mainstream. We've got it constantly shifting and covering up things and refusing to report stories or filtering them in such a way that you can't figure out what the facts are. And then these people sit around and, you know, they come up with things like the American people are so stupid, therefore we have to lie to them about things like Obamacare, when the reason that we're stupid to some degree is because nobody has the time or the means to gather all their news themselves, and therefore we trust these bodies, ABC, CBS, NBC, to impartially fact find for us, and it turns out that they're not impartial in any way, shape, or form. Anybody who listens to the news who's not totally partisan realizes that there is not any kind of, you know, indifferent reporting, unbiased reporting out there. It just doesn't exist. And so that's what gave rise to Fox News. That's what gave rise to talk radio. And, you know, these are the only places that you can really find the truth. You find the truth and it's reported, and then the people who report it are said to be, you know, part of this right-wing conspiracy. It's very sad. It's very sad that the far left is so nervous about facts and about people's, you know, tendency to draw their own conclusion that they can't let escape all of the facts in any particular case or all of this general facts so people can kind of put one and one together. It's something else. But I mean, like, we have each other here in talk radio, and you know, so when the president went after Fox News and said, you know, Fox News needs to learn how to report, that's scary. Now, bringing up the topic of the government being involved in stuff like that, ICON, which is this body that runs the internet, is going to be transferring control of the internet to an international body. That is terrifying. Why can't we just leave it the way it is? I mean, you know, oh boy. So the head of the nonprofit group that oversees the world's internet addresses expressed confidence Thursday that it would be privatized and out of U.S. government control by the year's end. What does that mean, privatized? Privatized means sold to the private sector, and I don't believe that's what's going to happen. Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, ICON. I don't believe in any sense that this is going to make it less partisan. You know, it's going to... Can you imagine the United Nations running the internet? What a disaster. And so that's the kind of decision making that's being made at the highest levels. And because there's a group of people that says to defer to a higher body. And what's a higher body over, you know, nonpartisan? It's the same argument that the left puts out for the media. The same reason the president is lecturing people on how to report news. We need to hand this over to a higher body. Well, what if the higher body has more power, is not a democratically run organization, doesn't have checks and balances in it, and is even more biased, you know? I mean, why is it that these kind of leftist theories are always assumed to be true? Like, you know, like just unimpeachably correct assumptions, you know? All right, so anyway, that really sticks in my craw. I'm going to, I gave a speech a couple of nights ago at the Las Cruces Gun Club on the history of the Second Amendment. I'm going to get into that a little bit. There's other stories out there as well. There's a story on the DA's office on the front page, DA Mum on Cell Incident Report, that we're going to get into. And we got graduation coming up. So anyway, to give you a little bit of B.B. King here live. This is from a show that was the host was Kenny Rogers. Check this out. Well, I've got a little bit on Tom Brady. I know there's some Patriot fans out there and some NFL fans that are interested in this. Here is a little bit from CNN on the Deflategate suspension appeal that he's putting in here. And I believe that it was stated he put in a 20,000-page report, or his lawyer did, in response to this four-game suspension. Don't forget that Tom Brady has gotten more, a bigger a suspension than the guy that beat up his girlfriend, knocked her out in an elevator, and then dragged her out and threw her on the ground. Pretty amazing, isn't it? All right, I've got some a little bit of weather for you here from KVIA. All right, so, yeah, a little bit of wind, but we need that this time of year. No, pretty much no matter what, there's going to be wind. But the rain last night was very welcome, not quite as much as the night before, but we did get a little sprinkle. And for you gardeners out there, you got to be happy about that, keeping the temperature down. All right, so we've got a story, a local story. I'm going to get into this. We'll take a little break first, but I'm going to get into this story that is basically having to do with this guy that was beaten. The claim is he was beaten in his cell by the authorities. So there's a big $12 million lawsuit out there, and the DA is mum on the charges. So anyway, here's a little more B.B. King for you, the great, the legend, and heck of a talent. 625 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. It is Open Topic Friday. We'll be back. Okay, so we're talking about this case in which the DA is trying to decide if there's going to be charges filed. The incident happened last December 23rd, and the claim is, and there is obviously evidence to support this, that what happened was this gentleman, Mr. Ross Flynn, was arrested for on the charge of threatening a neighbor with a firearm, and that what the police came and arrested him, and when he was in the cell and restrained, handcuffed, that they went into the cell and threw him against the wall and kneed him in the ribs, broke his ribs, and that during this incident he sustained multiple injuries, including a fractured skull, a brain hemorrhage, broken ribs, contusions. And this is according to a lawsuit that was filed on his behalf. And so the DA, who had initially said that he wanted to have an outside agency help to investigate this, said that he is not sure what they're going to do. But But they are stating that the investigation was finished a couple of weeks ago, and Mark D'Antonio's spokesman said that they haven't decided yet whether they're going to charge this. I've got a clip of this, and this is from March 4th, but it'll be a little bit of background on this case for you. And by the way, $12 million more dollars. Who's going to pay for it if the police department loses? You know? All right, so can you imagine that if we lost another giant lawsuit, $12 million? And if you saw the video, and I would encourage you to go to KOAT to take a look at it, you know, the guy comes up to the door and gives what it looks like a little kick, and then they come into the cell and they grab him and they wrestle him around. He's a big guy. Looks like he's well over 6 feet, and he's a little bit, you know, a little tubby. But the question here is, you know, what is the, you know, I don't know. It just seems like another, I don't see how, if there is a lawsuit on this that goes to trial, I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk for the police. It just watching it, I don't know. I mean, you know, the jury will come to its own conclusion, but looks like it could be another big payout. So I'll keep you posted on that. The state police said that they did forward the files to the DA's office, and so they it stated that whether they're charged or not, the lawsuit is going to go forward, and there's going to be you know, the possibility of a big payout. And we've how many big payouts have we had, you know? So anyway, I guess, you know, it's easy to criticize the police. Maybe they felt like that they had no other choice, but it just, from the video, it just doesn't look like the guy's really out of control. He just comes up and gives the door a little kick. But anyway, 635 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We'll take a break here. 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Good morning, Mike. What's up?
Hey, Kelly, I was wondering. I was looking at a map yesterday, and it was on Google, and they said that different kinds of deaths. It was a New York State Cancer Registry, and it shows the most distinctive causes of death for each state.
Yes.
And well, it ranked, you know, I looked at New Mexico, and it said legal intervention. And then it was the same for Nevada and Oregon. Is that usually caused by, like, this incident that happened, like, with the police?
I don't know. I mean, you're the one with the article. What does it say?
Well, I Googled legal intervention, and it says, you know, something to that effect. Like police brutality.
Mike, having a hard time hearing you, but
it mentioned something like like police brutality, you know, that kind of thing. Legal intervention.
Mike, are you saying that the New York Times is reporting that a highly ranked cause of death in the state is police brutality?
Well, they call it legal intervention, and it's the same for Nevada and Oregon, the three states. Like, they ranked Texas, tuberculosis. Arizona was, like, death was caused by, like, a firearm or something, like discharge of firearms, undermined intent.
Well, I mean, I'd have to, I guess I'd have to take a look at that. I don't know. I mean,
It was on Yahoo yesterday.
So do you think there's an unusual amount of police brutality in the state?
Well, you take Albuquerque Police Force. They had that shoot first policy.
Yeah,
look at that homeless
true.
Guy they shot, you know?
Yeah, no, there's been a lot of deaths up in with the Albuquerque Police Department. There's no doubt.
And then you have all the probing going on, you know?
Well, I don't think anybody's dying from the probing. Anything else, Mike?
Well, I don't know. I just think that...
Thanks for the call. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. All right, folks. All right. I've got a little story here for you. Couple of stories. New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez, no plans to call a special session. Negotiations have failed. And Susana Martinez has no plans to call a special session to consider spending more than $260 million in funding that is already earmarked. And her spokesman, Chris Sanchez, she says that the governor met with the Finance Committee Chair John Arthur Smith to try to get something together, but it was failed. So maybe we're not going to get that together this year, although I think most people want to see this money spent to help the economy and help some of the projects that they were going to be working on. It's a capital outlay project, a bill, and who knows what will happen. All right, here is a report on Albuquerque School ranked among top 100 in the country. U.S. News and World Report is saying that Cottonwood Classical Prep School is the 76th best high school in the nation and 22nd best among charter schools. And other highly ranked schools are listed. But so here's the thing, and this is I saw a story in which they're saying that the president is opposed to the U.S. president is opposed to these private schools, but he went to a private school and his children are in a private school. And so what's the story there? Here is a story from KOAT, a waiver allowing New Mexico teachers to teach more subjects. All right, so a little bit of room for growth there, apparently. Interesting murder case locally, or not locally, but with a local connection. There's a murder case in Pennsylvania, which is going against a soldier who used to be at Fort Bliss and his eighth grade girlfriend. She's 14, he's 21, and they are accused of killing her mother and burying her in a shallow grave because she was not allowing the daughter to date the boyfriend, which appears to be kind of a little bit of wisdom on her part, and she paid with her life. Okay, here is a report from NM Political Report. New Mexico lagging on job creation since depths of the recession. That's one story I have for you. Another one has to do with New Mexico, sex offenders, and daycare. And there's another story. I got a little story here for you. St. Augustine man, niece dead after chase to New Mexico. So a few interesting stories for you. It is 646. Sam, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Open Topic Friday. We'll be right back. It is 6:49 on KOBE 1450. I've got a story here, a couple of stories, and one of which is that we're lagging in job creation since the very worst of the Depression. The report from Stateline at the Pew Charitable Trusts shows that while there is job growth around the nation, 10 states, Alabama, Arkansas, Maine, Mississippi, Missouri, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, West Virginia have seen total employment grow 5% or less compared to their lowest points. And that's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. On average, employment has increased 8% around all 50 states, but in New Mexico, it's less than 4%, 3.7%, about 3.75% job growth since 2010, or a total of 30,000 jobs. And so that just goes to show you that when you hear these business people and you hear the chamber and you hear citizens asking that we do something to create more job growth. And I just talked with a guy for about an hour the other day who's a business owner, and he's like, you know, I love it here, but it's like there is a conspiracy against the economy here. And it's people like Billy Garrett, Mr. Golden Earring, and Wayne Hancock who are hijacking the budget, increasing the taxes, hijacking the budget. And what's going to happen to, all of that money that goes into taxes is money that can't go directly into the economy, can't be used to invest in businesses and such. North Dakota leads the pack with 28, almost 29, you could say 30% job growth. It's because of their oil patch. And so anyway, we need to put our heads together and to do something about this. All right, here's a story. New Mexico struggling to move sex offenders as more daycares open up. And this is from KOAT. All right. So, I mean, basically, it's kind of what we were talking about the other day when I mentioned the possibility of sending these people to their own city, their own community, or an island or something. It might have sounded a little bit cruel, but I'm really trying to, was trying to think of, like, how could you, since the repeat offense of these people is so high and most people are so disgusted by it and there are violent attacks against these sex offenders, it might be a more humane thing to do to send them someplace where they're safe and they're totally, if they want to go there, or maybe even if they don't, because, there is a legitimate fear of reoffense. And, some of these people admit it. I basically have no control over my impulses. All right, here is a story. St. Augustine man, niece dead after chase to New Mexico. And remember the story where there was a chase from Cortez, Colorado, down to Shiprock and a murder-suicide. Here's another, chase with death at the end. Well, I stand corrected. It's the same story. I didn't know it was taking it back a step. How do they know it's a murder, how do they know it's a double suicide? So then I assume that the authorities believe that these two were having a relationship and were on the run to escape from maybe from the family finding out or whatever, from getting picked up by the police. But it's pretty tragic. All right, so top stories. This guy, his name is, him from ABC News, George Stephanopoulos, $75,000, giving his $75,000 gift to the Clinton Charitable Foundation, whatever it is, that has been under a lot of scrutiny. All right, the guy that wrecked the train in New Jersey or Philadelphia says he has no memory of this event, but that he was coming in in an area where you're not supposed to go more than 50 miles an hour. He was coming in at 106 miles an hour, and then the train broke. It braked and went down to 102 miles an hour. And but the line was not designed to handle that type of energy, that type of speed, and so it just went off and came apart. So anyway, I think the death toll on that is up to 8. I saw another story in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. That story said that there is no law currently to police or to control drones from, say, ground level up to about 1,000 feet. And the police are very frustrated by this because they feel like, with the privacy issues and also the danger of, attacking people or with, misuse or even collision with planes, there's got to be something done. So you can expect a coming out on that. Here's a little more B.B. King, who has passed away last night. The thrill is gone. We'll be back after break on the hour. I've got an article that I wrote on the Second Amendment you may find very interesting. We'll be right back. KOBE 1450. Hey, who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Bill.
Hey, what's up?
Sounds to me like there's training here. They need to check into his private personal life. He might have been trying to do another German air thing.
Bill, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Bill, hold on. I can't hear anything you're saying. Hold on. I can't. I have to keep the music up.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say,
Bill,
can you hear me now?
I can't hear you. Hold on. All right, man, what's up?
I was going to say, it sounds to me like this train engineer might have been trying to do the same thing the German co-pilot was doing.
Who was going to do that?
It's a train engineer. Sounds to me like he was trying to pull another mass suicide when he had a couple hundred people on that train.
Yeah.
Now, I can't see anything else that would cause that.
Huh. All right. Well, call back and let's get that ID on the air.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill. Good morning, 7:06. It is the 15th of the 5th month of 2015. If you're into numbers, it could be significant. We spent a little bit of time talking about some New Mexico stories, including one which was the DA's office investigating an attack, or according to the police or the jailers, I'm sure that it was the restraining a unruly inmate. And according to the lawsuit that's been filed, you've got a classic case of police brutality of someone who is restrained inside of the jail. What is at stake is a $12 million lawsuit, another giant lawsuit that has been placed against us. And we've already lost a couple. One of the reasons that I'm sure one of the reasons that the county commission wants to take in money and not say where it's going, maybe they're building up the fund just to pay for these lawsuits. But it is kind of sad. We'll find out more about it. But the DA has not decided whether they're going to prosecute. And I just, having seen the video, you look at the video and think, how can you not at least prosecute this? Because it just seems so excessive. Now, certainly there's a story. There is always a story that supersedes the video. The video never tells the whole thing. Although we look at a video, we see this is the whole thing right here, like Rodney King. But when you see the video, you see the guy come up and kick the door. It doesn't look like he kicks it very hard. And then they come in there and subdue him. And so the question is, why did they have to do that? All right. So I've got another story, national story, and I'll let you guys decide what it means. But to me, it was pretty disappointing to know that George Stephanopoulos, when we already think of the media as being highly biased, we find out that George Stephanopoulos, who was a right hand man of Clinton, unsurprisingly gave to the Clinton Foundation a $50,000 gift, but now it's supposed to be a $75,000 gift. He didn't tell anybody about it. And so the upshot is why are we surprised when we think the media is biased? We've got another call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley.
Citizen journalist. What's up?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Clintons are getting a lot of money from Boeing. That was on Rush Limbaugh yesterday. And apparently that money's not, I mean, it's just showing up in their foundation. So I don't know if they're getting kickbacks from Boeing. I don't know what they would have to do with it. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. I did have one thing to say about that Amtrak crash. I found an article yesterday in Salon. And it says that they have a thing called the positive train control. It's a system which monitors and has the ability to set the speed of trains while they are in transit.
Okay.
However, back in 2008, and this was also on Rush yesterday, we paid for a infrastructure stimulus bill, and we put out almost $800 billion.
Okay.
For that bill. None of it's been used on any infrastructure projects.
What's it been used on?
What's that?
What has it been used on?
Fraud is what Rush said. Fraud can never be funded. So apparently there's these things they can put on these tracks. However, since they didn't, the only reason that the entire Northeast Corridor and every passenger railroad in this country doesn't have positive train control is the lack of positive public investment. And I'm confident that whatever funding was allocated for these projects through our federal appropriations process came late and was inadequate to do the job all at once. So they haven't spent money where they should have been spending the money.
Okay, so when the upshot is that they're taking in lots of money, spending a bunch, and instead of making the world safer, they're using it for corruption.
Correct. So we're real safe, aren't we? I mean, it's an oxymoron in terms, but look what we're dealing with. So that I just thought I would throw that in there. It was $800 billion, and I did not realize it was that much money.
What was it called? The positive break? What do you call it?
On the train. The train, it's called a positive train control.
Okay.
Okay, that's the little device that they can – it slows the train down, or it gives a control to the engineer or something to slow it down. So those have not been installed. Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
mm-hmm. And then the Clinton Foundation is taking lots of money in from Boeing.
I guess it's not surprising if Boeing is, if that's true, Boeing is trying to influence undoubtedly a person that they think has got a pretty good chance of being the next president.
Yeah. And I don't know, I guess that they make the aircraft and they do other government projects. So they have a real interest in it. Also, one more thing about Hillary Clinton's brother, Tony Rodham.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's had his little hand. This was from Coast to Coast the other night on the 11th with George Norrie. And one of his guests was on. He's had his hand in the pot for the Haiti thing.
Yeah.
And Haiti is in major disrepair. They have not done one thing to fix that country up.
Well, that's the nature of Haiti, from my experience.
Well, it is, but
having lived in
don't set up a huge foundation.
Yeah.
To, like, you know what I'm saying? And take money and then not do anything. So, I mean, I'm just saying we're just as corrupt as you know, any other government in a third world country.
Huh. That's kind of sad to hear that. Thanks for the call, Patty.
Thank you. All have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. Folks, are we just another larger third world country at this point? Let me play a little bit from this Stephanopoulos thing here, and then I'll come back and talk about the train, because I got another phone call that said the train wreck was another suicide mission, just like the German wings crash. So I had not heard that. I don't know if it's true, but somebody called in and said that's their theory. All right, here's a little bit on Stephanopoulos. And Stephanopoulos, who's given $75,000 to the Clintons, worked as the right-hand man of Bill Clinton, and now he's reporting on Bill and his wife. All right, and so now we know that that's not even true. It wasn't $50,000, it was $75,000. I don't know if he misspoke or whatever, but here is his apology. All right, so do you accept that apology? I don't really accept the statement that he only did that to support AIDS charity and that type of thing. It just doesn't wash with me. Now, I think, you know, maybe he's, you know, he's friends with Bill Clinton and he wants him to know that he supports him. Maybe he believes in the work that he's doing. But at the same time, it's also a way of saying thank you and a way of saying I support you. And I don't know. He could find an AIDS charity. There's, I'm sure, many AIDS charities that he could have invested in out there. But that's, I guess, how I see it. Now, here's a little bit more from Howie Kurtz. And he's got analysis. Howard Kurtz is seen by a lot of people as one of the top media commentators. All right, and how would you compare this to, say, NBC News, Brian Williams, who's told some tall tales? I mean, what's the difference, really? I just don't I don't see this going away for him. All right, Kelly O'Connell, and I want to thank Ross and Builder Supply for backing the show, and go over there if you need any doors, windows, that type of thing. And we'll take a little break here. 720, you're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, to bring up any stories you want to talk about. I'm going to get into a Second Amendment article that I wrote a couple years ago. In the meantime, though, I'm going to talk a little bit about the train because it appears to be on people's minds. So we'll be right back at 721. Yeah, I know that. Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're looking at this train wreck here, and here's just a little bit more on it. People seem to be interested. As Bill calls up and says it was, in his opinion, the only real explanation is the another suicide. They found that the train accelerated towards the end of the time before the wreck. And the neighbors of the guy who was driving the train said he was a very careful, real nice guy. So anyway, here's a little bit more on deadly train derailment, ABC 7 WJLA, and from a few hours ago. Okay, so the mayor is giving a little bit of blame here on the engineers. So, all right, I've got another report here on. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, round two.
Mike, you're whispering.
I'm the horse whisperer.
Hey. Well, just get it out there, Mike.
What do you think about driverless cars?
I don't trust them.
Interesting. It
Mike,
sounds something like that Hastings, that guy that...
Mike, you're breaking up. Call back in. Mike, you are breaking up. Call back in. Folks, if you're going to call in, make sure your connection's good so people can understand what you're talking about. All right, I've got a little bit more. I don't like driverless cars because they're brand new, and everybody who's done GPS, anybody who's ever done GPS knows that GPS sometimes points you in the wrong direction. Why wouldn't that happen in a car? I'm not saying that a driverless car is impossible, but they've covered up. Google and Tesla have covered up wrecks, and I don't know. I mean, maybe there will be less wrecks if there are driverless cars. I was thinking about that because, you know, one of the chief causes of death in America is car wrecks, right? You know, injury and death. So it's possible. I know that they say that technology a lot of times takes away human error, but right now I wouldn't feel safe. Now, here's an Amtrak employee explaining positive train control that Patty had mentioned. And this is from yesterday. And this is from the Tom Hartman Show. All right, so we got the information that they do have the positive train control, but the funding isn't there. And according to Tom Hartman, who's an extremely liberal guy, talk show host, it's all the Republicans' fault. But all right, I guess that kind of begs the question, are these trains as safe as they could be? It seems like Amtrak has never really... It seems like it's never really taken off like it could. Well, you know, you compare it to Europe, and everybody talks about the high-speed trains over there, which are cool. If you go to France, they have this TGV line, which is high speed. It's like 100 miles an hour or whatever. It's a fun way to travel. But there are different market elements in America. There are vast spaces in America without... a whistle stop in between. So I don't know what that would have to do, but they just say that, you know, they have this high speed train they want to build between the San Francisco and LA, that they say will never be cost efficient. You look at this town, transportation doesn't appear to be cost efficient, but that doesn't stop them from investing in it. Anyway, here's a little BB King. Lucia will be right back. BB King died last night. It's 7:33 AM. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about the Second Amendment. Good morning. 7:37, flying those friendly skies. Okay, I did this article. I think it was in like in May or March of 2013 on the Second Amendment. And okay, so you know, Second Amendment, people think of weapons and they think of the right to bear arms. And then there's this debate that occurs that is basically between scholars and people that are arguing over whether this right to bear arms had to do with a militia. Can you have a weapon outside of a militia? And I've got a little history here that kind of it doesn't really completely wipe that topic out or question out. But what it does is it, you know, when I wrote this article, I wanted to kind of dig down and figure out, where does the Second Amendment come from? Where does the right to bear arms come from? Is it a, you know, truly just an American right, or was there a precursor to it? And what I found out was that, and this is according to a couple of books that I used, one of which was by Joyce Lee Malcolm, To Keep and Bear Arms, The Origins of an Anglo-American Right. And then I got into some sources, some law and stuff. And so what I found out was that from time out of mind, a phrase, time out of mind, there was in the history of the of England, there was the right to have a weapon. Now, originally in the history of England, the right to have a weapon had to do with a demand by the government that all families, all men, all boys, after the age of 7 or 8, would not only be trained to use a bow, because obviously there was no, you know, guns in early England, but all of these families would have a bow and be trained to know how to use it. And it was a requirement that occurs, or it comes up under the Statute of Winchester 1285. But before that, there was an understanding that all citizens, or all men, all boys, would be trained in the use of a longbow and have a couple of arrows, and that there would be a public area where the citizens or the residents would go out and practice. Now, what was the reason for this originally was because, you know, if you think back in medieval England, medieval Europe, there's not a big police force over there. There is just the citizens who have the responsibility of doing their own policing. And so at a time when there was increasing lawlessness, there was a duty of people to protect themselves, their families, and to take part in defending their neighborhood, their neighbors, their community. And so as time goes by, the idea of a militia kind of develops. And so your early armies were militias. Now, this is not a foreign army, an army that would be sent over to, you know, fight France or whatever. Those armies were assembled, obviously, from knights and trained people. But there was an understanding that if a hue and cry came up, then it would be the responsibility of people to respond, to come outside and come out with their weapons and be ready to fight. Now, this is from Miss Lee's book, Lee Malcolm's book, Joyce Lee Malcolm. It is natural to expect a man to defend himself and his loved ones, but the Englishman was obliged to protect his neighbor as well. From at least the early Middle Ages, whenever a serious crime occurred, villagers ready appareled, in other words, you know, ready for physical altercation, were to raise a hue and cry, and under the supervision of the local constable or sheriff, pursue the culprit, quote, from town to town and from county to county on, quote, pain of grievous fine. So everybody had to be ready to fight. Now, there was at one time in the history between Scotland and England, Wales, there were 90,000 men who were part of the militia or able to join a militia. So there were that many people that were trained. And this is when the population of England would not necessarily have been that high. Now, the second Statute of Winchester, 1285, put this into law, whereas every day robbers, homicide, and arson are committed more frequently than used to be the case, and felonies escape, in other words, felons escape, it is commanded that every man shall have in his house arms for keeping the peace according to the ancient assizes, the ancient assizes were basically kind of traveling courts. And so this is the history of what we understand to be the Second Amendment. It is rooted in this ancient, basically community responsibility to defend yourself and to defend others, to defend your neighbor. Now, Maitland, F.W. Maitland, who wrote a beautiful series of books on the history of the common law, he also writes the history of English law before the time of Edward I, on how virtually all Englishmen were expected to bear arms. And here's a quote: "The state in its exactions pays little heed to the line between free and bond. It expects all men, not merely all free men, to have arms." And so think about this. Even the serfs, the laborers who lived on somebody else's land, which we would almost think of as being slaves, these people were also expected to have a weapon and be ready to use it, be trained to use it. So that is the foundation of that. All right, so putting that in there, let me take another little break here. It is 744. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. We will be right back to continue on a little bit more on the history of the Second. And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. This is Robert with Secretary Padilla.
That's right, Robert. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Can we take a little break here and come back and talk to you?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Folks, and I guess I spaced out a little bit. We've got the Secretary of Finance in New Mexico is calling in, and we'll be right back to talk to them. Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going great.
Good. So who's on the line?
So it's Robert and myself, Demacia, Secretary Padilla.
Fantastic. Okay, so I gotta get a couple of ads out of the way.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, we're doing it right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing the ads, and then we'll come back. And how much time do you guys need?
We're good to go.
5 to 10 minutes, Kelly, should work.
All right, that's fine. Have you guys done a lot of interviews?
Secretary Padilla has. She's a seasoned veteran.
All right. And we're going to talk about a tax reduction that could affect 300,000 New Mexicans.
Right.
Yes.
Good.
Been a tax benefit they've had for the last 14 years.
What's that?
It's a tax benefit that New Mexicans have had for the last 14 years. And it is the individual taxpayer that has been taking advantage of this deduction.
Cool. That's great. So how's the weather up there?
Oh, the weather here is great. It's supposed to rain, but it's been raining in the evening, so that kind of cools it down. But other than that, it's just perfect weather.
Oh, fantastic. How do you pronounce your first name?
Demacia.
Demacia, okay. And we got about 30 seconds left here.
Okay. Do you know what question you're going to start off with?
Well, you know, how about if I ask you just a little bit about your background, and then we can move into you want to move immediately into the tax break issue?
However you want to handle this. Sure, we can start off with my background.
Now, people usually, they're interested how individuals got where they are, you know. Here we go.
Okay.
To be. Folks, Kelly here, 747, and we have got online here the Secretary of the New Mexico Taxation and Revenue Department, Demacia Padilla. And good morning, Ms. Padilla, and thank you for calling into the show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Where are you located?
The office is located in Santa Fe, but I have as the tax department has offices across New Mexico.
Right. I kind of knew that. Okay, so how about a little bit of background, where you're from, and how did you get involved in taxation?
Sure. Well, I'm a graduate of UNM, passed the CPA exam a long time ago. I went to go work for a national tax firm in Las Vegas, one of the big eights at the time. Came back to New Mexico because I really love New Mexico. Worked for the Internal Revenue Service for just a little bit over a year and a half. And then I decided I wanted to own my own business. I was a sole practitioner I had a staff of about four individuals during tax season. And most of my professional career has been involved with tax compliance, tax planning, and just kind of helping businesses navigate through the administration of their tax issues. When I was asked by Governor Martinez to become the Secretary of Tax and Rev, I was extremely surprised. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever thought I'd be the top tax administrator for our state. But I can tell you it has been one of the most rewarding jobs that I've had. It's a fabulous opportunity for me to give back to my community. I think I bring the perspective of working with so many small businesses and individuals that I understand. I understand the struggles and the of trying to properly administer comply with the tax laws.
Okay. Well, so your assistant had emailed me a little bit about something that you guys wanted to talk about, which was a tax that could be taken advantage of by 300,000 New Mexicans, one third of all taxpayers. Could you? That kind of caught my eye. Could you give us a little bit of info on that?
Sure. It is the unreimbursed medical expense deduction. It's been on the books for 14 years. We have over 300,000 New Mexicans that take advantage of this tax break. And, you know, we always talk about how we want to make sure that we have tax policy that touches as many individuals as possible. And just in Doniana alone, about 28% of your listeners have been taking advantage of this tax deduction. It's going to be disappearing unless something happens, because Representative McMillan, right from Las Cruces, introduced a bill to make sure that this deduction stayed on the books. It went through the committee process. It passed the House. With zero no votes, it was just unanimous. And then it went over to the Senate side. We went through the committee process. And, well, what can I say? In action by the senators. And here we are today. We are going to have a tax deduction that is really needed by a lot of New Mexicans, obviously by the fact that over 300,000 people have been taking it. And because the Senate decided that they were just going to not bring up a perfectly good bill for a vote, next year that deduction will be disappearing from the tax form.
Is there anything we can do?
Well, you know, I just don't know what we can do. I guess we can encourage our state senators to make sure that they take care of business when a bill comes up to the floor. They really need to give every bill the ability to get an up or down vote. Letting things die just because they don't have an opportunity, that just doesn't make sense. I think what really disappoints me the most is that when the Senate fails to stand up for New Mexicans, working families, and in this case, the elderly, because they also take advantage of this credit, we get hurt. And it's all because they refuse to take a vote on an issue. I think when a bill goes through the process, it deserves the right to get a vote, up or down. You know, if the bill would have come to the floor and it got voted down, well, at least there was a voice. But now, due to their inaction, there was no voice.
Right. Okay. So we can't save this bill, this law, in other words.
Well, I guess, you know, if there would be a special session, and I don't know where that is at, hopefully they would recognize that this is something that's important enough that needs to be considered. I think once level-headed minds take a look at it and they understand how many New Mexicans are taking advantage of it, it is, you know, it's a really simple thing to do. Let's help New Mexicans continue to take advantage of a tax deduction that's been helping them for the last 14 years. And more importantly, maybe we need to start sending letters to our state senators and letting them know that when we send them up to Santa Fe, we're expecting them to allow the process to work, and that process includes allowing bills to have a vote on the floor.
I couldn't agree more, because it's the job of the House members to bring forward bills that represent the beliefs and values of their constituents. And if these bills die and are never heard, it's the opposite of the democratic process.
Right. Well, you know, the one good thing that I was really happy about this year was on the House. You know, Democrats and Republicans came together in a bipartisan way, and they got a lot of work done. Mm-hmm. More importantly, they ran the process so timely. You could actually call somebody and ask them if they were interested in a particular bill, give them a time and a date, and they would be with some, you know, maybe 10 minutes here and there, but things were done very timely.
Yes.
And we really need the Senate to be in the same kind of fashion, where things are done timely, where bills are given an opportunity to be heard.
Yes. Speaking of timely, we've got about 30 seconds here left. What would you like people to think about when they're thinking about tax and rev, other than shuddering?
Well, one of the things I'd like for you to think about tax and rev, and it's really, believe it or not, it's on the MVD side of the house. We've done a lot of things to improve the way we operate at MVD, and I think one of the ways that New Mexicans can best experience MVD now is by renewing their driver's license online, renewing their car registrations online. I think to take advantage of our online products, it takes you out of the office, it takes you out of the line, it leaves you in the comfort of your home, and it allows you to do your business efficiently. It costs you the same amount of money.
Yes.
Actually, it saves you money because
Great
you save
idea.
Time and gas.
Great idea. We got to go. Sorry
okay.
that we're a little – we have a couple more – I have a couple more ads to play, but I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much, and can we get you back soon?
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in, Secretary Padilla. Have a great day.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye. All right, folks, we'll be right back.
Cornerstone Christian Academy is –
Hey, it's Kelly. Sorry about the time. There were a couple of ads that I had to play. I didn't want her to feel like I was trying to squeeze her off, but I'm literally out of time for the end of the show. I didn't mean to cut her off. Okay. Well, let me know when you guys want to come back on. Okay, Robert. Thank you, and have a great weekend. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.